A cold prickle rose in the middle of Jaina's spine. She lowered the electrobinoculars and spun on her heel, staring down into the jungle toward the spot that seemed to be the source of the feeling. She saw nothing but shadow. She started to stretch out in the force, but then the whine of an approaching airstriker became a scream, and the heat of the burning canopy began to warm her face, and she knew Zek had not made it in time. Jaina spun back toward the sound and found herself looking through the canopy bubble directly into the red eyes of a Chiss pilot. There was no emotion in the woman's face as she twisted her control stick, swinging the maser fans in Jaina's direction. Walu screeched, and Jaina felt her own hand rising as though to ward off a blow. But instead of turning her palm toward the emitter fans, she flicked her fingers sideways, reaching out with the force to bat the airstriker's control stick out of the pilot's hand. The Chiss's eyes widened in surprise. She lunged after the rebellious stick, and Jaina did not see what the woman did after that. The airstriker simply dipped into the jungle canopy and vanished. And an instant later, an orange plume of fire boiled up through the trees. The rest of the squadron roared past, spraying crimson curtains of death 50 meters to either side, filling the force with the anguish of thousands of dying Kylix, instantly turning the air so hot that Jaina's throat stuck closed. Then the prickle between Jaina's shoulder blades became a cold shiver. She leapt without taking the time to look and found herself dropping through the smoke-filled jungle with no idea what lay below. No idea beyond the danger that she sensed. She was in someone's sights, and she knew it. A flurry of blaster beams began to stitch the air around her, forcing Jaina into an ungainly force tumble that sent Walu flying. She twisted around, reaching out to draw the Kylix back to her, and saw Walu's thorax shatter as a blaster bolt tore through it. Jaina felt the Kylix's death as though it were her own. A terrible fire blossomed inside her and began to crackle on her fingertips, longing for release, for vengeance. A Mogo limb appeared out of the smoke below, and she reached for it in the force, pulling herself over to it and lighting on it as gently as a feather. A handful of blaster bolts tore into the tree's trunk, then abruptly stopped when her attackers realized she was protected. Jaina snapped her lightsaber off her belt and force leapt to the branch above, then crept close to the trunk and peered around it, toward the source of the blaster bolts. As she had suspected, Long Nose and Scar Cheek were crouching in a trunk notch in the next tree, their large dark eyes scanning the area where she had disappeared. Jaina scowled. Hit squibs. She began to scan the surrounding branches, planning a route that would take her behind the two assassins, unsure in her anger whether she meant to capture them or simply take her vengeance. That was when Zek touched Jaina through the meld, wondering if she was hurt, urging her to focus. Vengeance was not important. It was never important. The battle was all that mattered now. She had a responsibility to the colony. Jaina glanced skyward. The smoke was so thick that she could barely see the green rain clouds above, but they were still there, still pouring water down into the burning jungle. Jaina returned her lightsaber to her utility belt, then used the force to snap a small branch about 30 meters behind Long Nose and Scar Cheek. The two squibs leapt out of their hiding place and started down the tree head first, moving so fast that Jaina wondered if they were falling. Once the pair had vanished from sight, she whispered after them, using the force to carry her hard-edged voice. "We'll finish this later," she said, "if you stay alive that long." A pair of startled screams echoed up through the smoke. A moment later, the hum of a Stealth X's repulsor drives passed by overhead. She looked up to see a black streak flashing after the airstrikers, its laser cannons ripping the sky open. The metacannons were continuing to chew through the jungle, but now Jaina could hear other sounds too. The wail of enemy voices, the pinging of shatter gun pellets on metal armor, the chain thunder of exploding ammunition. The wreckers had reached the Chiss lines. Jaina retrieved her electro binoculars, then used the force to clear a hole through the smoke. The metacannons had cut a trench 300 meters into the jungle. A solid wall of smoke and steam was pouring out of this trench, while thousands of wreckers and millions of Zhuge were swarming into it. Clearly, the situation at the metacannons was under control. The battle at the perimeter was going more poorly. The Chiss had massed opposite the Colossalox, flinging vape charges and gas grenades at the great insects and firing their Carrick rifles from the roofs of their personnel carriers. The Killick Tide pressed the attack, pouring shattergun pellets over the shield or simply leaping into the horde of defenders. Then Jaina saw a Chiss vape charge fly astray when the soldier who had thrown it was hit by a line of shattergun pellets. Responding more by instinct than by plan, she reached out for the vape charge in the force. Her control at such a distance was almost non-existent, so she simply nudged it toward the nearest relay pylon and watched in surprise as the distant speck struck the post. A brilliant detonation dot appeared through the smoke, and a sudden jolt of surprise shot through the force. Jaina raised the electrobinoculars again, then cleared a viewing hole through the smoke, and was astonished to see that the relay pylon had disappeared after all. Killicks were pouring through the gap in the perimeter shield, enveloping a company of Chiss defenders and fanning outward in an unstoppable tide. The colony had broken the enemy line. Now the Chiss would have to evacuate. The vastness of the Megador's Hangar 51 rumbled with activity as a small army of technicians, droids, and support personnel rushed to ready the entire wing of Jedi Stealth X's for combat. The Stealth X's were temperamental craft with specialized equipment, so even simple tasks like fueling and arming required twice as much work and made three times as much noise as the same work on a standard starfighter. And the systems checks caused a cacophony in their own right. As a result, Jason couldn't overhear what Luke and Mara were saying to Saba and to his parents at the Falcon's boarding ramp. But he doubted it was a problem. They were all holding hands and embracing, and he could feel their concern and warm feelings in the Force. Jason reached the foot of the Falcon's boarding ramp and stopped, waiting his turn to embrace his parents and wish them a good journey. Jason? Jason felt his father's eyes on him and realized everyone was looking in his direction.
You here? Han asked. You're not having another of your visions, are you?
No, just... He was surprised to find a lump in his throat. Just thinking.
Well, stop it, Han ordered. You're scaring me.
Jason forced a smile. Sorry. I wouldn't want that. He turned to his mother. You can't talk him out of this? Leia must have sensed something despite his defenses, because she ignored the joke and said, Is there a reason I should? Jason rolled his eyes, but silently cursed his mother's perceptiveness.
It was a joke, Mom.
He spread his arms and wrapped her in a tight hug so she would not be able to examine his face too closely. I just came to wish you a safe trip. He released her and turned to embrace his father.
Good.
Had Jason realized he was going to have such a hard time concealing his emotions, he would have found an excuse to be busy doing something else when his parents departed.
Bye, Dad. Take it easy, kid. We're coming back.
Han suddenly stiffened, then pulled back and eyed Jason nervously.
Aren't we? You haven't seen something.
You're coming back, Dad. I'm certain of it, Jason said. Just be careful, okay? Raynar isn't going to believe you, and it won't help that you're telling the truth.
Is that what you're worried about?
Han sounded relieved.
Look, kid, we've been over this about...
We'll be fine, Jason, Leia interrupted, finally warming to him and squeezing his hand. This is the only way to make the Chiss understand how difficult it would be to win a war against the Killicks. Saba stepped up behind Leia, looming over her the way Chewbacca used to loom over Han.
Everything will be fine, Jason. Your mother is a powerful Jedi, as strong in her way as you are in yours.
Jason nodded. I know that. He leaned down and kissed Leia on the cheek. May the Force be with you, Mom. And with you too, Jason, Leia said. We're not the ones who'll be attacking Gorog's nest ship. Han's face suddenly fell.
That's not what you're worried about, is it? He asked. Did you see?
I didn't see anything, Dad, Jason said.
Really?
He shooed his father up the ramp.
Go on. I'll meet you when this is over.
Han studied him for a moment, then finally nodded.
I'll hold you to that, kid. Don't let me down.
He took Leia's hand and started up the ramp. Saba remained behind, one slit-pupiled eye fixed on Jason, and began to sis in amusement.
You are always full of surprises, Jason Solo.
She started up the ramp.
Always so full of surprises.
Jason had to fight down a moment of panic. He knew that Ben found the Bearable Master frightening, and he was beginning to understand why. She was just so hard to read. Before starting up the ramp after Saba and the others, C-3PO paused in front of Jason and tapped him lightly on the shoulder.
Oh, pardon me, Master Jason, but did whatever you saw have anything to do with me?
Before Jason could answer, Han's voice sounded from the top of the boarding ramp.
3PO, if you're still on that ramp in 3 seconds, you'll be riding to Tanupe, cargo clamped to the hull.
Threats are hardly necessary, Captain Solo.
C-3PO clumped up the ramp after Saba and the others, his golden hands paddling the air.
I'm coming! I'm coming!
Jason smiled and waved a last farewell to his parents, then retreated to safe distance and watched with Luke and Mara as the boarding ramp retracted and the Falcon slipped out of the hangar. The ship hung below the Megador for a moment, a mere teardrop of white durasteel, framed by the hangar's huge mouth, then spun toward the Star Destroyer's stern and streaked off deeper into the unknown regions. The Chiss survivors had withdrawn to a chain of islands in the Great River, a defensible position, but not an impregnable one. For days, the defoliated jungle had been reverberating with the crashing of the colony's field artillery. The trebuchets were flinging rough-edged boulders, the catapults hurling waxes filled with hand-pat incendiary. Every now and then, the Kilix even sealed a few thousand of their smaller fellows into a flight of wax balls and cast them onto one of the islands. Nothing shook the Chiss. They remained hunkered down behind their breastworks, smothering the flames, tending to the wounded, picking off any Kilik foolish enough to show itself outside the soil work that shielded the field artillery. The Chiss still numbered nearly 100,000, more than enough to prevent an assault across the river's swift current. After so many weeks of constant raging battle, even the colony was beginning to run low on soldiers, and Jaina knew that any attempt to seize the islands would end in the destruction of her army. But a Chiss relief force might be arriving at any time, and Unu Thul was growing impatient. He remained out of mind touch with the ground forces and didn't understand what was preventing the final push. His will had become a constant dark pressure inside Jaina's breast, urging her to press the attack and force the enemy's hand. Soon, she feared, he would grow weary of waiting for her plan to work and simply exert his will over the Kilix. She needed to find a way to dislodge the Chiss now. Jaina's fragile replacement Walu communications assistant joined her. Tell Wrecker to unmask, Jaina ordered. Even if they can jump over the islands, now is no time for a leap charge. We can't get anyone there to support an exploit. Walu objected. I am doing something, Jaina snapped. These aren't Imperials we're fighting, they're Chiss. They're not going to fall apart just because we throw a few million bugs at them. A sudden silence fell over the jungle, and Jaina realized that every Kilik in sight had turned to stare at her.
Blast it!
Jaina shook her head at the temperamental insect ego. Don't be so touchy, we're fighting a war! She went into the jungle behind the trebuchet, then slid down a muddy bank into a shallow stream beside the emplacement. Walu followed behind her, landing on all six limbs and never breaking the surface of the water. Jaina started downstream, circling back around the trebuchet toward the Chiss Islands. Doing something. An approving drone arose in the jungle, and Walu skated along on the surface of the stream beside her. Don't know yet, Jaina answered. But it'll be good. As Jaina waded through the water, she was careful to keep her eyes level with the terrain next to the stream, her gaze always turned in the direction of the islands. The jungle floor was piled high with shriveled foliage and splintered mogo wood. Thousands of dead kiliks, perhaps tens of thousands, lay in the detritus. Finally, only a narrow spit of jungle floor separated Jaina from the great river. The Chiss Islands lay on the other side of a fast-moving channel, beneath the still constant hail of boulders and burn balls from the clacking catapults and moving trebuchets of the kiliks. Still being careful not to show her head above the stream bank, Jaina brought the electro binoculars to her eyes and found a mass of red eyes and blue faces peering out from between the mogo logs, scanning her side of the river for any hint of kilik activity. She was not sure what she hoped to find. Maybe some place where the defensive lines didn't have a clear view of the river channel. Perhaps a cluster of mogo trunks that could be brought down atop the heads of the defenders. Twice, she thought she spotted weaknesses where the Chiss did not have clear fields of fire. They turned out to be traps. One designed to channel the attackers into a large expanse of quicksand. The other protected by the few pieces of field artillery that the Chiss had managed to salvage during the retreat. Jaina's gaze reached the end of the first island. She turned her attention to the near riverbank, this time looking for a natural place to launch a crossing. Then, felt somebody looking back at her. Cover! She pulled the electro binoculars away from her face and dropped down behind the stream bank, then saw a pair of bright flashes explode into the slope in front of her. The attack was coming from behind her. Jaina dropped underwater. She pulled herself along the silty creek bed, moving upstream and reaching out in the force in the direction of the attack. She felt two presences, both very familiar. Squibs. Blast it! Couldn't those two wait until after the war to try killing her? When Jaina judged she'd traveled far enough upstream to be out of the Chiss line of fire, she yanked the lightsaber off her utility belt and rose out of the water. The air around her immediately erupted into a storm of flashing and zinging, but she had already activated her lightsaber and brought it up to block. She batted half a dozen bolts aside, several times narrowly escaping injury when her blade had to be in two places at the same time. After a couple of moments of frantic parrying, Jaina finally sorted out the source of the attacks and realized the squibs had her in a crossfire. She began to redirect their bolts toward each other, forcing them to worry about their own cover as well as attacking her, and it was not long before she found the chance to extend a hand and force jerk one of her attackers out of his tree. The squib's alarmed squeal was followed by a soft thud, then by a shrieking storm of maser beams, as the Chiss sharpshooters reacted to the disturbance in the manner of most soldiers under stress, by shooting at it. Fortunately for the squib, their angle was poor, and he was far enough from the river to be well protected by the trees. But the attacks did at least force him to keep his head down. Jaina used the force to wrench his blaster away, then flung it into the jungle and turned her attention to the second squib. She batted five or six blaster bolts straight back into the tree root behind which he was hiding, and when a big chunk of wood flew skyward, he finally stopped firing. Then she force-jerked him out of his cover and pulled him straight to her, not minding that the Chiss sharpshooters did their best to pick him off as he passed between trees. As the squib approached, it was Long Nose. He tossed his repeating blaster aside and reached for a thermal detonator hanging from his utility harness. Jaina flicked her fingers, and the silver orb sailed away before he had a chance to arm it. Long Nose's shiny eyes widened in surprise, then grew squinty and hard.
It don't matter what you do to me, girlie. You're...
If you had any brains, you'd watch who you called girlie, Jaina said. She dumped the squib into the muddy water, then held the tip of her lightsaber so close to his nose that it melted his whiskers off. "Don't move. Don't even breathe." Long Nose's eyes crossed as he focused on the tip of Jaina's blade, and she slowly let him sink.
"Can't I tread water?"
"If you can do it with your hands over your head," Jaina said. Long Nose's hands went over his head. Then he sank so far into the stream that he had to tip his head back to keep his chin above water. Satisfied, Jaina turned her attention back to Scarcheek and was relieved to find him firmly in the grasp of a handful of Mollum, threatening and flailing as he tried to free himself. Jaina turned to tell Walu to have the squib brought over and found the little Killick floating a few meters downstream, bobbing lifelessly in a slick of gore and shattered chitin. Long Nose tipped his head.
"Sorry."
Jaina risked sticking her head above the stream bank long enough to call the Mollum over with the second squib. As the Killicks dashed from tree to tree, dodging maser beams, she pushed Long Nose up onto the bank. She unbuckled his utility harness and tossed it and the holdout blaster and vibro knives hidden on the underside back into the water.
"Hey!"
he demanded.
"Those are my clothes!"
"It's warm," Jaina retorted. "We're on a jungle planet." She studied Long Nose for a minute, touching him through the force to make him uneasy, then deactivated her lightsaber and leaned in close. "Why are you trying to kill me?" she demanded.
"I'm not talking,"
Long Nose retorted. "Are you sure about that?" Jaina asked. She used the force to press him into the muddy bank. "Because you and your friend get to live if you answer my questions."
"You're bluffing,"
Long Nose said.
"You can't kill us in cold blood. You're a Jedi."
"You're right. But there's no time to watch you either." Jaina cast a meaningful glance toward the approaching Killicks. "So your fate will rest in Mollum's hands. What do you want me to tell them?" Jaina turned her attention to Scarcheek, whom the Mollum were bringing down into the stream. The Killicks had been none too gentle with their prisoner, tearing off an ear and leaving him half bald. They deposited him in the mud next to Long Nose, then took up encircling positions and stood there clacking their huge mandibles. Jaina snatched Scarcheek's utility belt off him and tossed it into the water with Long Nose's. "How about you?" she asked. "Feel like answering a few questions?"
"No."
"Too bad," Jaina said. "Because if you do, you leave here alive. Otherwise, I'll let Mollum deal with you." Scarcheek glanced at his Killick tormentors and couldn't suppress a little shudder. Then he shrugged and tried to appear unintimidated.
"Depends on the questions, I guess."
"Fair enough," Jaina said. "Why are you trying to kill me?"
"Dumb question,"
Scarcheek retorted.
"'Cause we took a contract. What do you think?"
Long Nose rolled his eyes and began to shake his head. "Who put out the contract?" Jaina asked.
"The directors,"
Scarcheek said.
"And it's just you. They said to leave your boyfriend out of it, unless he got in the way."
"Zek isn't my boyfriend," Jaina said. "And you haven't answered my question. Not really. Who are the directors?"
"I guess there's no harm. It's not like you're going to live long enough to go after them,"
Long Nose said.
"The directors are the head of the family. Our great-great-great-grandparents. Grease, Sly, and Amala."
Scarcheek finished.
"Your parents had some dealings with them on Tatooine."
Jaina nodded. "I've heard about that. Why do they want me dead?" Long Nose shrugged.
"Didn't say. You owe them money?"
Scarcheek asked. Jaina shook her head.
"Your parents owe them money?"
Long Nose asked. "I doubt it," Jaina said. The two squibs glanced at each other, then Long Nose nodded.
"Well, you're costing them money somehow," That's the only reason the directors ever put out a contract. Or maybe your parents are.
Scarcheek added.
If they ignored a warning.
Long Nose nodded enthusiastically.
That's usually what it is when they send us after the kids.
Dad never heard a warning he took seriously, so that part makes sense. Jaina was more mystified than ever. But I still don't know how my parents could be mixed up with your, the directors. What business are they in?
What business aren't they in?
Long Nose snorted.
But right now, it's a lot of war stuff.
Scarcheek said.
Double billing supplies, gouging for fuel deliveries, vouchering meals that were never served. You know, the usual stuff.
Long Nose continued.
War is always good for a few billion credits in off-the-book profit.
Okay, now it makes sense, Jaina said. If she knew her parents, and her Uncle Luke, and the rest of the Jedi, they would be working to end this war as quickly as possible. And if their efforts had upset these directors enough to put a hit on a Jedi, then whatever they were doing was effective. Maybe her parents actually had a chance of stopping the war. Jaina shifted her gaze to the Hitsquib's Mollum guards. Get these two out of here. Turn them loose. Boomed several of the Mollum together. A deal's a deal, Jaina said. She shifted her gaze to the Squibs. But your contract is finished, you understand? If we see you again, anywhere, you're speeder kill, okay? The Squibs' muzzles fell open in surprise, and they both nodded enthusiastically.
Yeah, sure. Whatever you say, doll.
And don't call me doll, Jaina hissed.
The pearlescent blur of hyperspace had barely winked back into the star-sparkled velvet of normal space before the Falcon's proximity alarms began to scream. Han hit the reset so he could think, and the alarms screamed again. What the blazes? Han demanded. There was nothing ahead but the swirling disk of a cloud-swaddled planet that he assumed to be Tanupe, and it was still no larger than his fist. Far too distant to have triggered the first proximity alarm, much less a repeat. What's out there? Working on it! Leia's hands were flying over the control board, adjusting static filters and signal enhancers. These sensors don't calibrate themselves. Okay, take it easy, Han said. I didn't mean anything. He hit the reset again, and again the alarms reactivated themselves. The repeats could mean that more hazards were appearing, or that the original hazard was drawing rapidly closer. Seeing nothing between them and the planet, he began to accelerate. Tanupe swelled rapidly to the size of a Bith's head, and the azure blots of hundreds of cloud-free inland seas began to model its creamy disk. "Is it wise to accelerate while we're sensor-blind?" June asked from the navigator station. At Luke's request, Pelion had arranged for him and Tarfang to serve as the Solo's guides to Tanupe. "We still don't know where we..." "You see something in front of us?" Han interrupted. "Only Tanupe." "Same here." Han reset the alarms, then cursed as they instantly reactivated. "So whatever keeps triggering those alarms is coming at us." "And we are running?" Saba was incredulous. "We do not even know from what." "Think of it as getting out of the way," Han replied. He activated the intercom so he could speak to the Nogri. "Get into the cannon turrets and let me know if you see anything suspicious." Tanupe had swollen to the size of a bantha's head now. Hanging to one side of the planet, Han could see a shadow-pocked lump that might be a small red moon. On the opposite side, a cluster of tiny wedge-shaped specks were circling above the clouds. "That doesn't look good," Han said. "Leia, how are those sensors?" Han's question was interrupted when Meewal and Cockmame announced that there were ion trails closing on the Falcon's stern from all directions. "Chiz?" Saba asked.
"Hoota, hoota."
Tarfang chuttered something sarcastic.
"Tarfang believes so. He points out that Killick fighters still use rocket propulsion.
A trio of crimson bolts flashed past barely a dozen meters above the canopy. Then a gruff female Chiss voice came over the hailing channel.
Millennium Falcon, this is Zark 2. The Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet demands that you bring to a dead stop your vessel. Stand by for boarding.
Han activated his comm microphone.
Just a second.
He glanced over at Leia, then pointed at the control panel and raised his brow. When she gave him a thumbs up and began to bring the sensors online, he continued.
Sorry, you'll have to say again. Your basic is a little...
Another flurry of energy beams flashed past the cockpit, this time so close that they left spots in Han's eyes.
That is clear enough, Falcon. This is a war zone. If you disobey, we fire for effect.
Han's tactical display came up, and he saw that the Falcon had an entire squadron of clawcraft on her tail. The fighters were escorted by two heavy gunboats and an assault shuttle, a standard package for a boarding company. But it was what Han saw near the planet that really alarmed him. As he had suspected, the wedge-shaped flecks circling above the clouds were a huge Chiss battle fleet, clustered together over one tiny area of the planet.
Leia, see if you can...
Working on it,
Leia said. A moment later, the image from a cloud-penetrating sensor scan appeared on Han's display. Most of the planet's land surface seemed to be covered by lowland jungles or mountain rainforests, but the area directly beneath the Chiss fleet was a brown smudge. A huge river ran through one edge of the smudge, and a tiny area along one bank shined red with thermal energy. The lock alarms began to chime incessantly, announcing that the Falcon was being targeted by her pursuers.
Millennium Falcon, this is our final warning. Bring your vessel to a dead stop.
Han pushed the throttles to the overload stops and dropped into an evasive corkscrew. Laser bolts instantly began to streak past on all sides, and the cabin lights flickered as the Falcon shields began to take hits.
Captain Solo, the squadron leader's accent must be confusing you. She ordered us to stop.
I heard.
Han's eyes remained fixed on the image of the riverbank.
But that looks like a battle down there. A big one.
A depletion buzzer activated as the Chiss continued to pound the rear shields. Realizing he would never escape a dozen clawcraft with Fancy flying alone, Han activated the intercom again.
Are you two taking a nap back there? Shoot something!
The Falcon shuddered as the Nogri immediately cut loose with the big quad cannons. Leia's eyes widened.
Han, I don't know if this is a good idea, she said. Killing Chiss is only going to aggravate.
Look, I'm not the one setting the stakes here, Han said. If I know my daughter, she and Zek are in the middle of that battle down there. And that means the Chiss are trying to kill them. So pardon me if I return the favor.
A damage warning began to scream, and suddenly the yoke felt like an angry snake, snapping from side to side and forward and back, twisting right, whipping left, then kicking and bouncing like a kid on his first bounce stick. The Falcon went into a shuddering vortex, and more alarms screamed as delicate systems began to take secondary damage from the violent shaking.
Shut down number 4 in the cell,
Han ordered.
And if that doesn't work, try the others.
Leia's fingers were already stabbing at the control panel, trying to catch the correct light switch. In the middle, a synthesized boom reverberated from the control panel speaker, and Han glimpsed a Chiss designator vanishing from the tactical display. Even with all of the shaking and spiraling, one of the Nogri had hit a clawcraft. Han was not that surprised. Leia finally managed to shut down the number 4 nacelle. The Falcon stopped shuddering, but her acceleration slowed and the yoke grew stiff and sluggish. Han struggled to bring the ship's wild spiral back under control.
Han,
Leia's voice was brittle with fear.
You know what I was saying about aggravating the situation?
Yeah.
Forget it, she said. They're already mad.
Yes.
Saba's hiss had an air of thoughtfulness.
Master Skywalker did not know how far the situation has deteriorated.
Thanks for your opinions, Han grumbled. Now could someone get back there and disconnect the number 4 vector plate? We're handling like a one-winged manta right now.
Mantas can fly with one wing?
Saba gasped. No, Master, Leia explained. That's the point.
Oh!
Saba jumped up and tapped Tarfeng on the shoulder, then started toward the back of the flight deck.
Why did you not say it was so bad?
A jolt ran through the Falcon as they took another hit, and Han saw on the tactical display that the claw craft were beginning to close the distance more rapidly.
Jai! How long before we're in the clouds?
We won't reach them, June announced immediately.
What are you talking about?
Han demanded.
Of course we'll reach them.
June shook his head.
I've done the calculations. By the time we decelerate to enter the atmosphere...
Who says we're decelerating?
Han demanded. June's voice grew even more nasal.
We're not going to decelerate?
Another boom reverberated from the control panel speaker, announcing the destruction of a second claw craft. The boom had barely died away before the hailing channel grew active again.
Captain Solo, that is quite enough.
The voice this time was male, and very familiar.
Come to a dead stop at once.
Sorry, someone's shooting at us.
Han continued to corkscrew toward Tanupe, which was now so large that its cloud-blanketed face filled the entire forward viewport.
Is that you, Jag?
It is,
Jagged Fell confirmed.
And I will not tolerate any more casualties.
Then I advise you to order Zark Leader to stop pursuit, Leia retorted.
I am Zark Leader,
Jagged replied coolly.
And I am not at liberty to end this pursuit. If you do not stop immediately, there is only one way this can end.
You're a squadron leader now? Han asked. What'd you do to get busted down that far?
Nothing. My rank remains intact. Bring the Falcon to a...
You're the same rank? Leia broke in. Are you telling me a commander is leading the squadron?
Captain, actually.
Captain? Han began to feel sick to his stomach. You're here because of us. You knew we were coming.
I should have thought that was obvious, Captain Solo.
Han did not respond. He was too busy trying to bring the Falcon out of her spin, and silently promising a painful death to whoever had betrayed them to the Chiss. Only a handful of people outside the Jedi Order had known of the Solo's destination, so it wouldn't be difficult to track down the spy and put a blaster bolt through his head.
But now that you understand, perhaps you see how hopeless your situation really is.
Hopeless? Han scoffed. I'm not even worried!
He shoved throttles 1 through 3 past the overload stops. The Falcon began to spiral even more wildly, and a slight tremble returned to the yoke.
Han, Leia said.
Yeah?
I'm a little bit worried.
Relax!
The yoke was vibrating so hard in Han's hands that it made his teeth chatter.
Those are rain clouds down there!
So?
So when we pull up under them, Han explained, they'll put out the entry burn.
You're entering a gravity dive?
June's voice was filled with awe.
May I have permission to record? We should document how you pull out, especially given the damage to our controls.
If we pull out, Leia groaned. She hated gravity dives. But go ahead. What can it hurt?
We'll pull out, Han said. Assuming Saba and Tarfan get that vector plate disconnected. And we'll need to know if there are any mountains in that mess. Better run a terrain scan.
I'll try, Leia said. It's difficult to get a reading while we're spiraling out of control to our deaths like this.
Who's out of control?
Leia began to activate the imaging scanners, struggling to keep her hands on the appropriate switches as the Falcon bucked and shook.
Wait a minute, Han said.
They were so close to Tanupe now
that all they could see ahead was a pale mass of green clouds, marked here and there by a blue blob of cloudless sea, spinning past the forward viewport ever more quickly. Something's not right.
You can say that again.
Leia sent the terrain scan to his display.
Look at this.
The map showed a rugged jungle planet of high mountains and vast drainage basins, with no large oceans, but rivers wide enough to see from orbit. It also showed a dozen cruisers converging on the Falcon's point of entry, their course and original locations clearly outlined by the huge vapor trails they were leaving in their wakes.
Get a tactical readout on those.
The data appeared on Han's tactical display. As he'd expected, they were drop cruisers, terrible in space combat, but ideal for supporting planet-side operations. And the energy blooms on their hulls suggested they all had fully charged tractor beams.
This is a setup!
Han pulled the three functional throttles back to three-quarter power. Not suddenly, but enough to buy a little reaction time.
Jag is trying to drive us into a trap!
Han waited until Tenupe's little red moon showed through the top of the canopy, then jerked back on the yoke. Jagged Fell's voice came over the cockpit speaker immediately.
I told my superiors that trap wouldn't fool you. But if you check your tactical monitor, you'll discover your situation has only grown more hopeless.
Han checked his display and had to agree. A pair of Chiss Star Destroyers had appeared on Tenupe's horizon, eliminating all hope of escaping around the curve of the planet. Zark's squadron was cutting the corner behind the Falcon, approaching at an angle and continuing to fire.
Don't force me to destroy you and the Princess, Captain Solo. Things didn't work out between Jaina and me, but I still remember you all fondly.
Do what you have to, kid.
Han pushed the three functioning throttles back past their overload stops.
I always liked Kip Duran better anyway.
Leia slapped the comm microphones off.
Han, are you crazy?
She demanded.
Nothing to worry about, Han said. He's bluffing.
Han, Jagged was raised by Chiss.
They don't know how to bluff.
Must be why they're so bad at it.
Han winked at her.
Send Meewal and Cockmame to help Saba and Tarfang with that vector plate. I don't think we're going to need them in the turrets much longer. But it would be nice to have control of this tub again.
Leia activated the intercom and relayed the order. The laser cannons had barely stopped firing before Jagged's voice came over the comm again.
You have stopped firing on us. Thank you.
He sounded genuinely relieved.
But I cannot stop firing on you until the Falcon comes to a dead stop.
Jagged, we all know that if you were serious about this, we'd already be space dust. Leia replied.
What I can't figure out is why you're going to so much trouble to save us.
Your confusion surprises me, Princess. I should think the reason would be obvious to someone of your diplomatic and military background. You and Captain Solo will be valuable prisoners, and so will Master Sabatine and Buatu's master spies, the Ewok and the Sullustan.
You're very well informed, Jag, Leia said, but not well enough. If you knew our mission, you'd know we're trying to end the war. You would be helping.
I know you and Captain Solo came here to find Jaina and her, companion. I also know you want to help them smuggle a Killick commando squad into one of our command and control centers. I know your brother believes, wrongly, that this maneuver will prove to us how difficult it would be to win a war against the Killicks. He also believes it will make it easier for him to persuade the ruling houses to accept the peace that he intends to impose on the colony. Is there anything else about your mission that I should know?
No, that about covers it, Han said, speaking through gritted teeth. He'd assumed that some spy eavesdropping in a hangar or briefing room had betrayed them, but clearly it had been someone a lot closer to the Jedi Order than that. Someone close enough to know Luke's entire plan.
You think it'll work?
No,
Jagged said icily.
I'd have to kill you first.
Yeah, that's what I figured, Han said.
Zark's squadron continued to pour fire after the Falcon. Another damage alarm started to scream, prompting June to take C-3PO and rush aft, but the claw craft began to drift back on the tactical display. Still fighting a sluggish yoke and an out-of-control spiral, Han dropped them back toward Tanupe and continued toward the planet at an oblique angle. Han? Leia sounded worried. What are we doing?
This doesn't make any sense,
Han said. The yoke had started to shake again, and he was fighting to keep it from swinging around at random.
They know our plan. They ought to be coming after us hard.
Han, this is hard. Leia's gaze was fixed firmly forward. There's a whole task force after us.
That's what I mean, Han said. You saw that battle down there. Do you think the theater commander really wants Jag wasting his time chasing us right now? They should just blast us back to atoms and be done with it.
They won't need to, Leia said. Han, we're heading for...
Whoever double-crossed us made them promise to take us alive, Han continued.
The boiling red curtain of a Star Destroyer barrage blossomed ahead, jolting the Falcon and spreading spots before his eyes.
Leia, it had to be someone close to us.
Okay, Han.
Leia pointed forward, where the hazy blur of Tanupe's atmosphere was whirling around the center of the viewport.
But what are you doing?
Just what it looks like. A planet skip.
Han activated the intercom.
Hold on back there.
An instant later, tongues of red flame began to flicker over the viewport as they entered the thin gas of Tanupe's upper atmosphere. The Falcon bucked so hard that Han slammed against his crash harness, and the clamor of flying gear echoed up the access corridor. The barrage vanished as suddenly as it had appeared, leaving nothing ahead of the Falcon but the blotchy red surface of Tanupe's moon. Han pulled the throttles back to the overload stops, gripping the handles tightly to keep his hands from shaking.
See what I mean? They killed that barrage to keep from vaping us.
Yes, okay, I believe you. Leia's voice was still shaky. They promised someone not to kill us.
Yeah. Han's tone was bitter. I wonder who that could have been.
You're thinking Omis?
That's the only thing that makes sense, Han said. Cal Omis would sacrifice us in a minute if he thought it would convince the Chiss that the Alliance isn't at war with the Ascendancy.
Leia shook her head. Why would he bother making them promise to keep us alive?
Because he needs the Jedi too, Han said.
The moon ahead had swelled into a lumpy, fist-sized ovoid, laced with a spidery web of dark rifts.
And if his double-cross ever comes out, Omis would never be able to make peace with Luke if we were dead.
Their discussion was interrupted by Jagged Fell's astonished voice.
I'm finally starting to understand, Jaina. Insanity runs in her family. Only a madman would attempt a planet skip in a damaged ship.
Han's not crazy, Leia said. Just good.
I'm sure you believe that, Princess Leia,
Jagged said.
But I'm advising you not to attempt taking refuge in that moon cluster.
Moon cluster?
Han peered more closely at the red lump ahead and saw that the rifts might indeed be interstitial spaces. He deactivated his comm microphone, then asked,
What the blazes is that?
I'll find out, Leia said, reaching for the terrain mappers. In the meantime, stall. Han turned his microphone back on, then calmed.
Thanks for the advice, Jag, but we were planning on going around anyway.
Really? Then the Falcon must be even faster than Jaina always claimed.
Han glanced down at his tactical display and saw that the Zark squadron had taken advantage of his planet skip to put on their own burst of acceleration. They'd stopped firing, a sign that they now felt certain of a successful capture, and were arrayed in a semisphere around the Falcon. Han cursed under his breath, but said,
Just watch, kid. You'll be surprised.
I have no doubt. But please believe me about the moon cluster. It's gravitationally unstable. Every one of our scout ships has been smashed flat. You'll be much safer surrendering to us, and I give you my word that we won't torture or humiliate you during your interrogations.
Thanks, that's real good of you, Han said. Let me think it over for a second.
Han closed the comm channel, then experimented with the yoke, pushing it around and feeling almost no reaction from the Falcon.
How bad is it? Leia asked. She was still staring at the terrain mapper, frowning and adjusting the controls.
Bad, Han said. How about those moons?
Even worse than he said.
Leia looked out at the moons, which were close enough now for her to see that they were all shifting around, bumping against each other.
It looks like something shattered the old moon into 50 or 60 pieces.
It must still be in there because I'm detecting...
Leia let her sentence trail off, then gasped and stared out the viewport.
Yeah? Han asked.
Leia raised her hand to quiet him, then closed her eyes in concentration.
Han tried to be patient, waiting for Leia to do whatever Jedi thing she was preparing, but they were running out of time. The two Star Destroyers had activated the tractor beams and were already reaching out toward the moon cluster, trying to block any chance the Falcon had of slipping into one of the crevices. Han activated the intercom.
Somebody back there, get to the repulsor beam now! We've got some rocks to move out of!
Han, no! Leia opened her eyes and turned to him, shaking her head.
We have to surrender.
Han frowned. Look, I know the yoke's a little sloppy.
It's not that. Leia reached over and pulled the throttles all the way back.
It's Raynar and the Killix. Those moons are teeming with insects.
The Jedi stealth X's appeared, as always, as though by magic. An entire wing of dark X's hanging against the crimson veil of the Utagetu Nebula. They floated there for just an instant, then drifted over to the black ribbon of a stellar dust cloud and vanished, darkness merging into darkness. The stealth X's continued their approach in full confidence that they remained undetected, and soon the bright disk of the yellow planet Sarm began to swell in the forward panels of their cockpit canopies. The Jedi pilots kept a careful watch for sentries, both on their sensor screens and by reaching out in the Force, and easily avoided a single inattentive blast boat operated by pirates. The stealth X's swung wide around the planet, positioning themselves to descend on the Nest ship with no Force presence. It was in the lowest orbit, where it would be screened from attack by the rest of the fleet. That was the Dark Nest's vessel, the one where Lomi Plo would be hiding. And Luke's plan was simple. The Jedi would sneak into position around the vessel and wait for Admiral Pellion to arrive with the Megador and the rest of the Alliance strike fleet. When he did, they would destroy any craft attempting to leave the Gorog nest, and then they would go inside and flush Lomi Plo from her den. But Sarm was too quiet. There should have been smugglers and Membrosia runners flitting in and out of the Nest ship hangars, and an entire flotilla of pirate vessels hanging in orbit. Instead, the fleet looked almost abandoned. Save for the presences they felt in the Force, the Jedi would have believed it was. Then, blue halos of ion efflux appeared around the sterns of the Nest ships, and the vessels began to accelerate. Now the Jedi understood the reason Sarm was so quiet. The Killix had already repaired their battered fleet. They were breaking orbit and deploying to challenge the Alliance blockade. Luke dropped into a power dive, swinging wide around two Nest ships to avoid the sharp eyes of the Killix sentries. Mara and Jason and the other Jedi followed close behind, grasping the change of plan through their combat meld. Kenth Hamner took his squadron and circled back behind the first two Nest ships, decelerating so their attack would hit at the same time as Luke's. Kyle Katarn's squadron peeled off and started for the far side of the planet. Tresina Lobi and her squadron broke in the opposite direction, heading for the front of the Killik fleet. The remainder of the wing continued toward the original target, the Dark Nest of Lomi Plo.
As they descended, Luke allowed his alarm to fill his thoughts and reached out to Silgal in the Force, trying to impress on her the urgency of the situation. She was still aboard the Megador with Tekly and the collection crews, and Pelion would listen if she told him the attack fleet had the jump now. She seemed at first surprised by Luke's contact, then worried, but quickly focused on what he was trying to tell her and returned his touch with reassurance. The Gorog nest ship grew steadily larger in Luke's forward viewport as he grew nearer, and soon its pale ovoid began to obscure Sarm's yellow surface. The planet took on the appearance of a huge golden halo behind the immense vessel. Luke pointed the nose of his Stealth X straight at the ship's heart, using its own shadow to shield his squadron from Sarm's planet glow. The strategy did not prove very effective. Insect eyes were especially adept at detecting movement, and barely a moment passed before R2-D2 scrolled a warning across Luke's display. Target energizing weapon batteries. Thanks, R2, Luke said. The three squadrons broke into different directions, then broke again, and split into shield trios. Good to have you riding the socket again, old friend. It's about time, R2-D2 replied. Your survival has been improbable without me. There have been a few close calls, Luke admitted. The nest ship was close enough now that Sarm had completely disappeared behind its pale orb. Luke could see a double row of turbo laser barrels protruding up from among the knobby heat sinks that covered its hull. The smaller weapons that would be attacking the Stealth X's remained concealed in a grid of dark shadows. Luke began evasive flying, leading his shield mates on a random, wild descent toward the target. Mara and Jason followed as though their controls were linked to his. A burst of elation filled the battle meld as Kenth Hamner's squadron attacked. R2, are they deploying? A sharp whistle filled the cockpit as R2-D2 warned that the Gorog had opened fire. Luke was already dodging. He followed the line of laser bolts visually down to their source, then reached out with the Force and shoved the cannon barrels aside. The deadly stream of color changed direction and began to pour harmlessly into space. Luke checked his tactical display. He saw no indication that the nest ships were doing anything except continuing to accelerate. R2, any sign of dark ships? Take it easy, Luke said. I just wanted to be sure. A turbo laser strike erupted ahead, bucking the Stealth X so hard it felt like they had collided with the nest ship, which they soon would if the squadron didn't launch its attack quickly. R2, arm the penetrator. R2 beeped an acknowledgement, and Luke sensed the rest of his squadron lining up behind him. Basically a Jedi shadow bomb with a trio of shaped charge warheads, the penetrator had been specifically designed to unleash a series of powerful focused detonations toward the interior of a Killik nest ship. A message appeared on the display announcing that the penetrator was live. Luke dodged past the fiery blossom of a turbo laser strike, then saw a pair of laser cannons flashing up from the dark crevices between a pair of spit-crete heat sinks. He force-shoved the barrels aside, then released the penetrator, and simultaneously used the Force to send the weapon smashing into the nest ship's hull. His canopy blast tinting went black with the first detonation, but the two explosions that followed were so bright that they lit the interior of the cockpit anyway. Luke rolled away, then did a wing over and flew back along the attack line. With no dart ships to worry about, he was free to watch on his tactical display as Mara, Jason, and the rest of his squadron released their penetrators in 1-second intervals. Each bomb disappeared into the crater left by the previous one, driving the hole deeper down through the nest ship's lair decks, wreaking increasing amounts of destruction and exposing more and more of the vessel's interior to the cold vacuum of space. By the time the last weapon detonated, the Gorog were in such a state of shock that all defensive fire had ceased within a kilometer of the impact area. Luke swung his Stealth X around and found a cloud of steam, bodies, and equipment tumbling from the crater, so thick it obscured the ship's hull. Once Luke sensed that a squadron had reformed behind him, he continued forward, using the Force to clear a path through the cloud of flotsam and bodies still pouring from the Gorog nest's interior. Luke reached the breach in the outer hull and activated the imaging system in his helmet visor. The dark interior of the nest ship was immediately transformed into an eerie hologram of vibrant colors, with white-hot lumps of spit-crete rubble and glowing red pieces of killix streaming up a long, seemingly bottomless shaft before they tumbled out into the void. The stealth X's shut down their ion drives and descended into the hull breach under the power of their maneuvering thrusters alone. When the squadron had descended 10 decks, the rear trio of stealth X's peeled off and glided toward the edge of the shaft. A few moments later, a series of blue flashes spilled out of the darkness as the three pilots came to an airlock and used their laser cannons to blast it open. A second trio of stealth X's peeled off after the squadron had descended 20 decks, and a third after 30. By then, the combat meld was charged with excitement, as the Jedi blasted their way deeper into the enormous ship from three sides, cutting down waves of vac-suited Gorog warriors with their laser cannons, blasting open airlocks, and using the Force to hide shadow bombs at critical locations. Luke and Mara and Jason passed the 40th deck and continued down to the 50th, the shaft narrowing to barely more than the spread of a stealth X's wings. The excitement in the meld turned to fear and anger and all the other emotions that boiled to surface in the midst of a pitched battle. Then Kenth and Kyle and Tresina Lobi began to radiate alarm, warning Luke and Kip and Corin that trouble was on its way. Luke was not worried. Dark ships were far less maneuverable than stealth X's, and would be next to worthless in the twisting wreckage. But that thought came to an abrupt end when R2-D2 trilled an urgent warning. B-wings? Luke asked. Armed more heavily than XJ-3s, B-wings were some of the most dangerous and maneuverable starfighters in the galaxy. Are you sure? Luke tore his gaze away from the dust-filled murk ahead, just long enough to check his tactical display. At this point, the image showed only the shaft behind them, a flared column of space packed with descending starfighters. Ours? That question was answered when the blue streak of an approaching proton torpedo appeared on the display. Luke instantly poured on some speed and ducked into the exposed decks, leading Mara and Jason away from the detonation area. The torpedo streaked past behind them, then reached the bottom of the shaft and exploded. Luke and his wingmates were partially shielded by several layers of deck, but the blast reached them with enough power to beat down their rear shields and hurl them into the next bulkhead. Luke spun his stealth X around while it was still wobbling. A constant stream of laser fire flashed down the shaft as Kyle Katarn and two members of a squadron attacked the approaching B-wings from behind. Luke glanced over and found Mara and Jason already using their attitude thrusters to move away from him, spreading out to lay an ambush. A pair of B-wings appeared in the storm of laser bolts pouring down the shaft breach. With their head-like cockpits mounted atop a cross-shaped wing structure, the craft had a vaguely human profile, like a man standing with his legs crossed and his arms outstretched. The first B-wing was descending in the upright position, slowly spinning around to search the adjacent decks for stealth X infiltrators. The second was flying on its back, firing back up the shaft at Kyle Katarn and the other attacking Jedi. The first craft started to spin more rapidly, trying to bring the torpedo launcher on its tail assembly to bear on Luke's stealth X. He grabbed the vessel in the Force and held it in place, then opened fire with his laser cannons. The startled B-wing pilot applied more power, trying to break free. Luke drew on the Force more heavily to counter the maneuvering thrusters, and all of the energy flowing through his body began to make his skin nettle. Mara and Jason began to fire too. The B-wing shields emitted an overload flash, then went down in a storm of discharge static. An instant later, the starfighter itself simply came apart under the combined fury of the stealth X cannons. The second B-wing gave up trying to hold Kyle and his companions at bay and dropped its tail to bring its torpedo launcher to bear. Luke started to force grab the fighter again, but Jason had already caught it and was holding it in place while cannon bolts pounded its shields from above. This B-Wing did not even try to break free. The pilot simply launched the proton torpedo in the direction it was pointed. Suddenly, the electronics in Luke's cockpit were popping and spewing acrid smoke, and the spit-creed ceiling was crashing down on a stealth X, and Mara was touching him through their force bond, surprised and worried, but somehow confident that they were not going to die. Not yet. Then Luke and his stealth X became just so much flotsam. The laser cannons and broken wings tumbling away into the dust and the rubble. The fusel engines banging against the fuselage, still connected by a few twisted shreds of metal. R2-D2 was screeching warnings over the cockpit speaker, his voice barely audible over the roar of escaping air. Luke sealed his vac suit and activated his helmet comm unit.
I'm okay, R2. Prepare to abandon the craft.
R2-D2 ran a message across the heads-up display inside Luke's visor. The self-destruct charge is missing. And there is no craft.
I know. Just unhook yourself.
Luke could feel that Mara was not injured either, but Jason was more difficult to read. He had drawn in on himself and vanished from the force. Luke opened a comlink channel.
Jason? Over here.
Mara's concern filled their force bond.
His canopy is smashed, but his visor is down, and I can tell that his vac suit is pressurized. He may still be alive.
Luke's breath left him in a rush of fear. Not again. He couldn't tell Leia that he had lost another of her sons.
Get him out! I'm trying!
Mara calmed.
Just calm down!
But Luke could not calm down. He felt as though he'd been punched in the stomach by a Wookiee. It took a moment to pick out her blotchy red image through all the rubble displayed by the imaging system inside his visor. But she was already wearing her combat harness, and she had her bulky G-12 power blaster slung over one shoulder. The battered remains of her starfighter were bobbing along in the rubble beneath her, and she was hanging onto the empty droid socket behind the shattered canopy of Jason's Stealth X. Now that he saw that Mara was already with Jason, Luke began to calm. What could be done, she was doing. But he did not understand how she'd gotten there so fast. Before the explosion, she'd been on the other side of him.
How'd you get over there? Bounced,
Mara said. She took the lightsaber off her utility belt.
You coming? Be right there.
Luke popped his canopy, then grabbed his own combat harness and slipped out of his darkened cockpit. He pulled the massive power blaster out of the carrying sleeve behind his seat, connected the power feed to the energy pack on his combat harness, and slung the weapon over his shoulder. A trio of Jedi presences arrived behind him, about 50 meters away. Luke glanced back and saw three empty spaces about the size of stealth X's amid all the dust and spitcreed floating in the penetration crater. Even this close, the imaging system inside his helmet was as blind to the starfighters as any sensor system.
Master Skywalker,
Kyle asked over the helmet comm.
Jason's out. We don't know how bad.
Luke used the force to pull R2-D2 out of the astromech socket and used a utility clip to attach the droid to the back of his combat harness.
We'll need a hand evacuating.
Luke let the sentence trail off. When an icy knot of danger sense formed between his shoulder blades, he dropped behind his stealth X and felt the fuselage vibrating beneath a hail of shattergun pellets. He peered under the belly of wreckage, but his attackers were too well covered for his helmet's imaging system to pick them out from the surrounding rubble. Luke worked to quiet his mind, to sense only the force holding him in its liquid grasp, lapping at him from all sides. He began to feel a mass of ripples coming at him from the emptiness ahead, from the shifting voids of beings hiding themselves in the force. There were hundreds of them, Gorog warriors rushing to the attack. And there was more, a stillness so fixed it was frozen, a cold hole that seemed to be drawing the force into it.
Lomi Plo is here,
Luke calmed.
She came after us.
Shatter gun pellets began to stream through the fuselage on Luke's side of the cockpit, and he knew that his protection was disintegrating fast. Still peering under the Stealth X wreckage, he pulled the heavy power blaster off his back, then used the force to send a speeder-sized block of spitcrete tumbling toward an even larger one, where he detected the nearest group of Gorog. The two blocks collided in silence and tumbled away in new directions. The shattergun fire stopped instantly, and images of warm bug gore and crushed pressure shells began to drift across Luke's imaging system. He spotted a trio of Gorog tumbling through the rubble, all six limbs flailing as they struggled to bring their carapace suits back under control. Luke swung the barrel of his power blaster around and fired one bolt at each insect, using the force to steady himself against the blowback caused by the weapon's massive energy discharges. Unlike the lighter blasters that Luke and Mara and Han and Leia had been carrying the first time they fought the Gorog, the big G-12s had more than enough power to punch through the thick chitin of a Killick pressure carapace. As each bolt struck, it literally shattered the protective shell and the bug inside. When no more shattergun pellets came his way, Luke turned toward Mara. She was crouching on the other side of Jason's Stealth X, trying to use her lightsaber to cut him out of the cockpit. She wasn't having much success. A small tangle of Gorog were floating toward her through the rubble, spraying Jason's crippled starfighter with shattergun pellets as they bounced from block to block. Luke extended a hand and sent them all tumbling with a violent foreshove. As they struggled to right themselves, he pulled a thermal detonator off his harness, thumbed the activation switch, and sent it after them. A sharp crackle came over his comlink as the weapon detonated, and his imaging system went momentarily dark. By the time the imaging system cleared again, Mara had cut Jason's canopy open and was depressing a button on his wrist to activate his suit's automatic stim system. Luke started toward them. He reached Jason's Stealth X just as Mara was pulling his limp form out of the cockpit.
"How is he?"
"Still alive," Mara said. Luke retrieved his nephew's combat harness and power blaster from the cockpit, then caught up to Mara and took an arm. As they force-pulled themselves toward a slowly tumbling chunk of spitcrete, Luke's imaging system showed a Stealth X-sized bubble pushing past through the flotsam. Kyle Katarn touched Luke through the battle meld, reassuring him, letting him know reinforcements were on the way. A moment later, the Stealth X's turned the battle zone as bright as day with their flashing laser cannons. Luke and Mara slipped behind the spitcrete with Jason. Luke used the force to hold the block steady so they could hide behind it. Mara opened the status display on the forearm of Jason's suit and checked his vital signs.
"Everything reads okay," she said. "Maybe it's just a compression blackout. Or a concussion."
Luke could hear the relief in his own voice.
"Turn up his comm volume."
Luke started to grab Jason by the shoulders, but Mara pointed him toward the edge of the block.
"Stand watch. I'll handle..."
An incoherent groan came over the comm channel. Then Jason's face grew suddenly pale inside his helmet visor. His eyes blinked open, and he nearly sent them all tumbling by trying to sit up.
"No, Jason."
Mara pushed him against the spitcrete.
"Stay put."
He looked confused for a moment, then turned to Luke.
"She's here, isn't she?"
Luke nodded.
"I think so." "Can you see her?"
Jason demanded.
"I don't know,"
Luke said.
"I haven't..."
A deafening pop came over the comm channel, and an orange flash briefly lit the battle zone. Luke felt the sudden anguish of a young Jedi's fiery death, then saw the wings and cannon mounts of a Stealth X spinning past along with the gravel and smoke. He slid over and peered around the edge of their spitcrete hiding place and discovered that he could indeed see Lomi Plo, the Dark Queen. She floated about a dozen meters away, surrounded by Gorog warriors and encased in a somewhat cylindrical Killick pressure carapace. A pair of long, crooked arms was still extended from her stooped shoulders, pointing toward the twisted skeleton of smoking durasteel that had been a Stealth X just a moment earlier. A second pair of shorter, more human-looking arms protruded from the middle of her body, while one spindly leg jutted out from the side of her hip, giving her an appearance more insectile than human. Intending to take her out with a sniper shot, Luke started to reach for his power blaster, but Lomi's danger sense was as acute as Mara's. A lightsaber immediately appeared in her lower set of arms, and she started to turn in a slow circle, scanning the rubble and looking for her would-be ambusher. Realizing there was only one way to do this, Luke snapped the lightsaber off his own belt.
Mara, keep the bugs off me.
Lomi Plo had spotted Luke and was staring right at him. The face inside the carapace was the same one Luke had glimpsed during their fight a few months earlier. A half-melted, noseless face with bulbous, multifaceted eyes and a pair of stubby mandibles where there should have been lower jaws.